Welcome to eHealth Learning, inspiring professionals worldwide.
We did a hilarious promo yesterday, wasn't it? Where you were shushing your dog and I was talking about a video that didn't exist, which was great. But here's the video. We're making it live now. So it was like a quantum advert or something. I don't know. So Kathy Dooley, welcome back. And Kathy's going to be running a course on embodied health learning starting next week at a slightly earlier time due to Kathy's travel on that week. And it's on lymphatics assessment and anatomy of lymphatics. And this is, I think, we had anatomy of gait and assessment. We had thoracic assessment, cervical thoracic. We had pelvic and hip assessment. And now we have lymphatics. So we're building quite a little gem course of gems. Tonight we're going to explore what the course is about and give people an insight into your approach to teaching. You run the Immaculate Dissection, and you have some great team members that do very clever secret techniques for painting on the body and revealing and peeling away the layers. Super exciting stuff for people who don't know what Kathy does. Take a look at Immaculate Dissection and follow her and what they do. And you had on that promo, you talked about a poster thing. You've got this awesome, is it a lymphatic poster?
It is not, although I will show you some lymphatic art by Danny, but I'll give you guys a teaser here in a second, but I'll be giving away one of our gait posters. So if you came on to the gait assessment talk from Embodied Health, we actually have a gait course that we call Gait Through Movement Subsystems, Anatomy of Movement Subsystems, inspired by Andre Vollemien's movement subsystems, not to be confused with the fascial movements. Those are kind of a little bit different, so I don't like people to be too confused by them, but they work very well together. And I think gait is a really difficult thing to understand, but we do our best to try to clarify it through movement systems. And we made a poster to help our students and anybody that wants help with understanding gait mechanisms. So we will be giving away a free poster in one of the next three Wednesdays. I'm not going to say which one.
Okay.
It may be more than one. I haven't decided yet. I want to see how engaged these folks are. So,
okay.
We're
working with you to build some quizzes, which has been exciting. Kathy submitted some awesome questions, and we thought, wow, these would be great for people to give themselves a reward to know that they've got it after they've taken your courses with us, these short courses, as well as testing people's knowledge and inspiring them to take your course. So we look forward to working with you more on all of the topics that you've covered and more into the future for these quizzes, because they were fun. So we're going to be sharing them soon. So what do people have to do? So this is a poster for people's practice. It's a professional poster, normally $100 with plus tax and shipping, but you're going to give it away for people. And what do they have to do? What do people have to do?
It'll be the first to answer a question correctly. Most likely will involve lymphatics, right? Since it's a lymphatic lecture. Just make sure people are engaged and paying attention, and to reward people for coming live with us.
Cool.
And having an engaging experience. So I'm not going to say what question it will be, because I want people to pay attention. The first two answers correctly in the chat box will get a free poster.
Super cool.
I'll pay for your shipping, everything. So
great. Well, that's really cool. And for those that probably most people know you, lots of people have registered for this webinar, many people. And you, next week, the course will begin. It's £60, and it's which is our lockdown super accessible, we hope, offer for these courses that we've had. We've had you and Steve Haynes and John Sharkey, super good people, and people have been loving those. So if you enjoy tonight's lecture, the link is in the Facebook. And if you're in our Zoom right now live, I'm sure you know where to find it on Embodied Health Learning in the courses section. So over to you, Kathy, for your intro webinar into the lymphatic anatomy and assessment.
Oh, I'm so excited to talk about this topic. So I don't want to give away the farm of the next three courses, but I thought you guys might want kind of an insight on what we'll be discussing in the three lymphatic courses. So just to start things off, I kind of want to ask the people that are on attendees, what do they think the lymphatics are? I always propose this question to my students and my med students and my dental students. And I just like to ask, like, what do you guys think the lymphatics are? When most people think lymphatics, they think sick or cancer, right? So I just want to make sure that that I understand what, from where you guys are coming with your lymphatic knowledge. Go ahead and type it into the chat box before I share what I think the lymphatics are through my studies. And the body's drainage system, she's 1/5 correct. drainage system, again, 1/5 correct.
Part of the immune system, lymph
nodes. Oh, now we got it. Yes, it's the biggest part of the immune system. It is all the things that you're saying so far. I just want to see drain off fluids and detox. Okay, I like it. So waste management and fluid drainage. Yeah. What else do we have? Lymph nodes. Yeah. Lymph nodes. Yeah. Home for lymphocytes. It's not just a home. It's a production site for lymphocytes. Yeah. Great. Anything else? I love these answers. These people are so well-versed on lymphatics. I love it.
Our members are quite clever, you know.
They're geniuses. I love it. Yeah. I hope there's something to contribute here. This is great. What I love people, they first say is drainage. And you are absolutely correct. And that's one of the major components of the lymphatic system for all this unidirectional channeling system that's very similar to the venous system, right? So it has a unidirectional flow to the heart, and it has valves, very much like the venous flow. And you would think like, okay, well, you know, the cardiovascular system is a closed system, but the lymphatics are an open system. Why, right? Why would we need this open system? It's for the imminent failure of fluid management by the cardiovascular system. Because there are these things called like peripheral resistances and, you know, changes in blood pressure. And we might have occlusions or an inability to exchange fluid properly between the arterioles and the venules at the capillary bed. And so the 17 to 18 liters of fluid that your body is managing through the cardiovascular system, it doesn't manage all of it. Some of it trickles into this cellular matrix, right? If we have to trickle into the extracellular system, what we have to be able to do is manage the flow or else we'll puff up, right? And so the cardiovascular system, arteries, veins, they do such a wonderful job with the vast majority of the fluid. But we need this backup system. We need a backup flow to be able to make sure that we can move pretty much in the same flow as the veins, but not be dependent upon the circulatory system. In the event that we have kidney failure, organ failure, we have liver failure, that we have heart failure, we want to have a little bit of time to be able to get fluid to flow back, to be able to manage it before we end up puffing out and then really affecting our ability to get the fluid back. So this fluid management system part is a huge part of lymphatics. So lymphatics don't have their own circulatory system, which is part of the assessment, diagnosis, and treatment, right? The fact that they don't is a huge player, which means that they are highly, highly dependent upon your movement. And I think that's my favorite thing that I've studied and learned the most during this pandemic when I've kind of taken a dive in on lymphatics, not just for you guys, but for myself, just kind of understand what all this sitting is doing for everyone, what all this sitting is doing to everyone, which may involve partially this stagnation in this fluid management, not just the cardiovascular fluid management, but the lymphatic fluid management. So the lymphatics have these things that we'll discuss in a little bit more detail next week, these microvalves. And since the lymphatic vessels are very similar to the venous system, we have to be able to take fluid from this extracellular area and then move it into the lymphatics through a negative pressure system, because fluid will move from an area of high concentration to low concentration, right? It's the basics of osmolality. So because of that diffusion into the lymphatics, we have to make sure that we're pumping things and pushing things, but it doesn't have its own lymphatic or own circulation. So we have to do it through mostly movement through muscle contraction and respiration. And manual pressure can also work, which is why manual therapists can never be replaced. There are really cool units, really cool things we'll talk about over the next 3 weeks that they have developed to kind of simulate what you do, only that stuff doesn't do a very good job of palpation. And there's an art to the science that you do as a lymphatic specialist. And part of that is through an assessment process and then an execution of a treatment that's very much constantly changing. Like, how many times have you folks worked on lymphatic channels and then a second later there's a problem in another channel, like another part of the system, whether it's nodular, whether it's lymphatic trunk, whether it's a ductile system. And it's fascinating to watch the fluid move. And I think that your abilities as a manual therapist are irreplaceable, and that you have to be constantly resetting the ability of where you're doing your work based upon, you know, patient presentation, based upon what's actually happening underneath your hands. So in this time, this very challenging time in a pandemic where we're not always able to see our therapist, what can we do to help our clients be able to help themselves until they can get to see us? And that is what I'm really passionate about in life. The secondary thing to anatomy is the application of anatomy. So I think that you're right. The fluid management thing is a huge deal. The bigger deal with lymphatics, the huge deal with lymphatics, other than that fifth of the fluid management, which is crucial, I'm not, no doubt about it, is the immune system. And it only took three people to say immune system, which I was really happy about, okay? The biggest part of your immune system is the lymphatic system. It is by far the most vast component of it. And it's the lymphatic system through mostly like the thymus and bone marrow that produce these incredible cells called lymphocytes. And we also produce plasma cells, but lymphocytes are your T cells and B cells. Now, where does that come from? T. It comes from thymus differentiated. So the thymus gland, if you guys just take a second, and if you're young enough, you're still differentiating. If you're older, you're probably not anymore. I'm in my 40s, so the odds are pretty good that I'm on the decline as far as my differentiation. But what you find is your manubrium, sterni. So if you just slide your hands from the suprasternal notch or jugular notch into the manubrium sterni, this area is the superior mediastinum. Right? The superior mediastinum. So directly behind your manubrium sterni in the superior mediastinum is going to be the thymus gland. It sits directly behind the manubrium, protected by this manubrium, this shield, right? Early in your life, it's so important that it's protected by a shield. And this thymus sits superficial to the brachiocephalic veins. It sits superficial to your great vessels, like the superior vena cava, the arch of the aorta, the ascending aorta, pulmonary trunk, and it's just anterior to your trachea, anterior to your esophagus. And so this thymus gland is helping you differentiate the T cells. And we'll talk more about the kind of cells and what they do and how they attach, because that's a really important component. We'll talk about complement next week. And these are kind of complicated terms, but we'll have some fun with it. And we'll use some really cool charts, and we'll talk about, hey, these are the cells that are fast acting, and these are the cells that are a little slower. Maybe you guys have heard about, T and B cells when you talk about immune cells like neutrophils and macrophages, things like that, right? This is a big part of the cellular mechanics of how we attack a pathogen. And since we're in the middle of a global pandemic, I think it's a really important time to talk about the immune system. What's shocking to me is that there's not a lot of talk about the immune system happening. I find that to be strange. We're talking about, you know, PCRs, you know, the tests, the pharyngeal swabs that we do, which is fantastic. We're trying to detect, you know, an RNA-based, you know, possibly viral component, right? And then we also are talking about antibody tests, which have largely become inconclusive worldwide. But we are talking about the immune system, right? But what I see missing is what we can do about our immune system. How can we not just flatten the curve, but lower it? And then having those conversations seems to be really, really controversial. And I don't mind being controversial at all, as long as you guys don't. I think that we need to get our lymphatics healthy and moving, because stagnation of the lymphatic system means stagnation of the delivery of immune cells, or even the production and release of immune cells. And since lymphocytes are B differentiated, which are bone marrow differentiated, And then T cell mediated, which are responding to respective pathogen and tagging it, right? We actually have the ability through the lymphatic system to tag pathogens, including anything new, like a novel virus coming into our body, we can improve the tagging. And so the lymphatic system does drain extracellular fluid, you know, up to 3 to 4 liters per day out of the 17, 18 liters that you do. So most research says about a fifth of the total amount of fluid, which is an important component, absolutely. But it's also the production of for immune cells and not to mention someone else had discussed it, the waste management system. What does that mean? Well, if you're managing some of this extra fluid, you're also managing proteins, byproducts that get thrown off. And then you also are infiltrating all these immune cells in. This happens to people that fight infections, whether it be a novel virus, whether it be something like cancer. So these things are extremely metabolically active, right? More especially once a virus attaches to a host cell, your body will start to say, like, look, this looks weird. This looks foreign. Let me start to send in cells. Whether it be your T or part of this immune cascade, and let's start to tag an antigen. And so because your body's immune system requires an enormous amount of energy to do that, then one of the best ways to help you normalize, I never use the words boost, but normalize your immune system would be to help the lymphatics out in any way you can. So, and that, oh, and a big part of that is getting the lymphatic system moving and keeping it moving, right? Because you're doing fluid management for the lymphatics, then, you know, of course, hydration becomes a massive component. Being able to stay not just hydrated with fluid, but hydrated with trace minerals that are very responsible to be moving fluid in and out of the intracellular matrix. This means good sodium-potassium ratios. And we know that muscle cells and various other cells have sodium potassium pumps, right? Particularly muscle cells. And if we are not able to get the sodium to move out of a cell, then fluid will start to follow sodium in to a cell. And so when people become trace mineral deficient or become unbalanced with their trace minerals, then it's really even harder for the lymphatic system to be able to pull fluid out because there's not as much fluid available in the matrix. If you start to collect fluid intracellularly, it's hard to get it out into the extracellular pathway. And since their job, the lymphatic's job, is to pull fluid from the extracellular fluid into the system, no matter if you have a negative pressure system or not in the lymphatics, you might get stuck with both intracellular and extracellular fluid. And in certain parts of the body, that can get really dangerous, like your calves. So we won't talk about the calves as much until the second major part. Just to give you dates, the 14th, next Wednesday, we'll talk about just the basic of the cells. On the 21st, we'll talk about the lower extremities. That's when we start talking about the calf and fluid management and how important that is. I'm sure you guys have made recommendations to give people compression socks, and we'll talk about why that works. How easy of a suggestion is that, and why it is phenomenal, and probably all of us should be wearing them most of the time. So unless we are contraindicated to do so, which we'll discuss. And then the waste management part of lymphatics is usually the part that people talk about the most. They'll talk about cancer, and they'll talk about any type of like parasite infiltration. And they'll talk about the fluid management problems that come with that. So if you have like this uptick in an immune response, then you end up with these secondary parts of the immune system called lymph nodes. They become quite enlarged. And this is such a valuable piece for your investigation with patients as far as palpation. And if you don't know the anatomy of the lymph node system, which if you were anything like me, folks, it's like it was glazed over. And I was in a doctorate program that would involve touch. And it just, you know, as part of our basic physical exam, but it really wasn't a discussion of what do you do then? And that to me was really odd. Nothing against my institution. I think there's just not enough time to cover a lot of things. And I should have taken more responsibility to learn more about the lymphatics way earlier than I did, I think. So I'm happy to share some of the things that I've learned about it. And when it comes to the nodes, And I want to show you a picture that Danny created for this. So there's a massive concentration in these various trunks in the body and then in nodes. So we have jugular trunks, we have subclavian trunks, we have intercostal trunks, we have iliac trunks, femorals that are coming through, and we're draining like all these major small vessels up towards the heart into these major channels called trunks. And the trunks have these pit stops, and you can see large amounts of pit stops. For the superficial lymph, it happens and follows veins. And in the deep ones, like you see here, they follow actually the aortic branches, right? So you can see like huge concentrations of nodes or pit stops where we have a huge amount of immune cell integration to be able to basically take the fluid and say, wait a minute, is this tagged? Let's tag stuff. And it wants to tag it so it can be destroyed by different parts of the immune system and then be refiltered through the lymphatics, eventually out to the liver to be repackaged. So our body's immune system is absolutely phenomenal, and the lymphatics are a huge part of it. I mean, most of the time we'll get a cold and not even really notice, like we'll have a rough 10 days and then it's over, but your body's working overtime, especially with the lymphatics, to make sure that it's only 10 days, right? So the femoral area, you can see, is a huge C-shaped chain of these nodes, these pit stops. And this is where immune cells migrate and wait for the chance to be able to work. We'll talk about a little bit more depth of what's actually happening during that next week. Then we'll talk about going into the iliac and aortic lymph nodes. We'll talk about some of the differences when we talk about the lower extremity between like the testicles and the femoral area, which actually have different drainage sites, right? So that actually becomes really clinically important. All this lymph from the lower extremity has to go towards the heart, right? Well, how does it get there? It has to meet over by the right renal vein in this collection site called the cisterna chyli, which is the chyle cistern. Chyle meaning this clear fluid of lymph, right? And then it has to travel through this major system called the thoracic duct. The thoracic duct is wedged between this very dark blue vein called the ischias vein and the aorta and esophagus on the left side. So it's kind of wedged basically between esophagus and ischias. And then it's so thin that my dissection students are like, that's it? Question mark, exclamation point. And I'm like, yes. I mean, that's good that it's not bigger. If it were bigger, it'd be full of something, right? So sometimes you'll see a really dilatated thoracic duct or cisterna chyli, and you know this person was possibly fighting infection. And if you are destined to see a cadaver patient that's succumbed due to the effects of cancer, then you see very enlarged nodes and possibly very dilated thoracic duct, depending on where the infection metastasis was located. So these chains Danny has kind of blown up for you, so you can see a little bit bigger over here, kind of how things flow. And then the thoracic duct's going to go into the mediastinum, the space that's between the lungs, between that ischias, between that esophagus, and it's going to move up and dump over to the neck. And my NYU students were just studying this week, how the thoracic duct actually comes from the posterior and superior mediastinum and then edges its way over to drain right between where Danny's blown up for you here, the left venous angle, which is the junction of the internal jugular vein with the subclavian vein. So the subclavian vein, if you don't remember, is the vein that drains the entirety of the arm, whereas internal jugular drains, you know, things like superior and middle thyroid area, drains a lot of the venous system of the skull into the brain, all the sinuses of the brain, the CSF flow, all of that comes into this spot. And so this venous angle on the left drains 3/4 of your body's lymph. And if you look over here on the left in green, Danny's draw this in green, this entire green area is what's being drained into the left side of your neck, making neck palpation pretty important. And how many of your patients complain of like discomfort here? Is this the anterior scalene? Do I know the difference between palpating the anterior scalene and the SCM? Do I know the difference of being able to palpate at the venous angle? So we'll talk about how to properly palpate the venous angle to see if is this a lip problem or is this more of just like a muscle tension problem at the scalene? Because their palpations are quite different. The right side of the body is a little different, right? So the right arm, the entire right extremity, right breast tissue into the axilla, drains into, and the right side of the face, head, neck, all drain into the right lymphatic duct. And so it's a smaller chain of events, but you can see Danny blew that up here and it drains into the right venous angle where the internal jugular and subclavian meet. And a lot of the patients, you'll see it drain right into subclavian right before the venous angle, but it just depends on the patient. And this is, as you can see, just a little bit of a lesser pathway to go into. And embryonically, this is quite functional because it allows for the side of your body that you're not using as much or as most to be able to drain into this area, whereas this side is freer to move in space since the vast majority of us are right-hand dominant and it's like 70 to 80% of the population. We think, oh, it's this weird thing. No, it's the product of evolution and highly necessary for it to be designed this way. So we'll talk about the breasts in our last week on the 28th, our third talk. We'll talk about the breasts and how through the parasternal lymph nodes, how you can cross midline, which is amazing if you're draining fluid and not so great if you're metastatic cancer. So remembering that this system is, you know, a massive drainage site for extracellular fluid, but also a major site for when things go awry. It's kind of like how 99.99% of the time the lymphatics are this great gift, and then that small percentage of the time where it can spread cancer or infection everywhere. It's a rough, you know, small percentage that you do have to worry about. But I also want to calm some of the worries about people are told that they'll spread cancer through lymphatic movement. And
I was going to mention that, Kathy. We had a lady teacher on our platform, Tracy Kiernan. She did a special, I don't know if it was one or more webinars, which is in the members area, on oncology massage and the lymphatics and all the kind of rules and regulations in the UK and best practices and protocols and latest science. But your input to that discussion would be really welcome. Yeah.
We'll definitely talk about that on episode 3 of the talk, because I've had people come to me petrified of spreading someone's cancer. And so they won't do like the lymphatic work, but there are rules and regulations that you just follow. And it actually isn't, and if you just work with the oncologist too, which usually, you know, people are doing if they have, you know, working with a patient with cancer, you can never forget that the immune response is helpful, and for stagnation to be present actually can exacerbate someone's condition and possibly even encourage the return. And so, you know, I know that oncologists have to go through a lot too to not spread cancer when they're removing sentinel lymph nodes. And there's this great debate on removing too much and being overly cautious and then causing lymphedema and not necessarily improving the patient's outcome with cancer. There's just a lot that's unknown about that. And I want to ease your discomfort with that by stating that you have a job that really matters, and there should be way more emphasis on what you can do for this patient with massage than what you can't do and what you might promote as far as cancer or infection spread. It's just learning what hot zones are and learning, you know, what the staging of cancers, which we'll talk about. And it's impossible not to talk about lymphatics and then end up talking about cancer staging, just because it's a really big part of what you do as lymphatic specialists. So I think that I'm really happy to see lymphatic massage on the rise. People talking more and more about what we can do with lymph. It's not just about cancer, folks, not just even about the immune system, not just about drainage. You guys know this is how we actually process fat as well. We can take emulsified fat and move it through the system for liver processing. And that is a big part of lymphatics too, is being able to take the fat through these things called lacteals in the intestinal system. Did you guys know that your intestinal system had lymphatics? This is so cool. It has this unidirectional system. These lacteals take this chopped up or emulsified fat and process it back to the hepatic portal system. which hepatic portal system means the big venous system of deoxygenated but nutrient-rich blood. And then the liver is like, okay, let me see what I can do with this. Let me package it and send it where it needs to go. And fat, as much as it was vilified for most of my living life, is actually a really crucial piece to a healthy immune system. Remember those fat-soluble vitamins, vitamin D3 and K and A? They are crucial to immune system health. And your processing of the fat means that you can actually make more usable fat, make it available to be able to produce things like sterile hormones, to be able to produce and accompany things like fat-soluble vitamins like A, D, E, and K. So we definitely don't talk enough in my world about the importance of the fat-soluble vitamins and the importance of fat and how it is not the villain. Just because you see fat in, like lipid, in atherosclerotic plaquing does not mean it's the causative agent of atherosclerotic plaquing. It's like, don't shoot the messenger that's just flowing through the blood. So the lymphatics have a huge play in your ability to be able to package fat and take it to the liver through the lacteals for the intestines and then to the portal system. This happens to the foregut, midgut mostly. And these structures are things like jejunum, ileum, and you get the idea, duodenum. Then not to be forgotten, the lymphatic system is massively linked to the spleen, right? The spleen breaks down, you know, red and white blood cells. And with the white blood cells being such a huge part of the lymphatic system, the spleen becomes a secondary lymphatic organ, as do tonsils, right? I can't wait to talk to you guys more about tonsils, because were you guys a part of that whole, I don't want to say baby boomer, because it's actually not accurate. People like to put in that category, because they were still doing it to me in like the 70s. They really, well, I guess early 80s, they were trying to remove my tonsils, my palatine tonsils. And so tonsils are secondary lymphatic organs as well. And so they're kind of like lymph nodes. They're like little pockets of lymphoid tissue. The back of your tongue, the whole back third of your tongue, it has lingual tonsils all over it. You have palatine tonsils that everyone likes to feel here, right? Up inside here. And they like to look in and see the jugulodigastric nodes, and then also the tonsils. And then there's a pharyngeal tonsil that most people call an adenoid. I don't know if you guys, do you guys call that adenoid in Europe? It's like a singular tonsil right in the center of the pharynx, the nasopharynx area. And so they used to remove them electively, like, oh, while we're in there, do you want us to remove your tonsils? And people are like, sure. And they actually found that people with tonsillectomy, meaning the palatine tonsils, or adenectomy, like the removal of the adenoid, pharyngeal tonsil, they found there's a massive increase in incidence of pneumonia.
My dad had his tonsils removed. He's like 72, and he gets recurrent throat and chest infections and is very weak there.
Ding, ding, jackpot. Yeah. So the point of the tonsillar activity is to have a site where all these cells can conglomerate and then tag antigens. If you remove them, it's like you're missing someone that's tagging you. One of my colleagues referred to them as kind of like the TSA. You kind of want to pick out some of the people you don't want in the system, and then the immune response will follow. You have to tag the antigen, and then things will start to flow towards the nodes, right? So if you don't have tonsils, then you are at an increased risk for infections like bronchomediastinal infections, any kind of throat infections involving the jugular system of lymphatics, may, you know, be players, even subclavian. So those tonsils are actually a part of what we'll discuss, if not next week and going into the following week. But being able to properly assess what normal is actually really challenging for a lot of people if they've not taken an additional lymphatic course. So we'll talk about like the consistency, what it would feel like. And we'll also talk about lymph scintigraphy. Have you guys heard that before? Lymph scintigraphy is a nuclear study. It's pretty cool where they start to tag the lymph nodes, and it's a form of imaging that we'll go over. And they use it mostly in cancer or in, you know, suspected lymphadenopathy that gets really, really bad. We'll definitely show you examples of lymph scintigraphy, especially involving the breast, where they start to map the sentinel lymph nodes. You guys heard of that before? sentinel lymph nodes are the first thing that the cancer cell dumps into, the most prominent cell. And that's the one they want to get in there and get out. One of my colleagues at Einstein Med, he talked about how they used to do a very conservative removal of what was considered sentinel lymph node. And sometimes doctors are a little less conservative and do a lot more. So I can't wait to hear about what you guys' experiences are in Europe about sentinel lymph node removal as well as adjacent lymph node removal, because there's a lot of lymphedema associated with that. Well, why would we get lymphedema from that? Why would you get a swelling of the limb distal to that? As you're starting to remove things, you're removing the ability to be able to drain into something. And so that extra 3 liters of fluid can't get into the lymphatic system through the negative pressure because it's not there. And so you end up with a big problem in fluid accumulation. So it's a natural part of, if they do lymph node removal for whatever reason, it's suspected that the person will get lymphedema, which is just accumulation of lymph distal to the site of lymph node removal. And there are ways that you help so much with that. We'll talk about my obsession with the palpation of these areas, knowing hot spots of palpation, knowing what to avoid, knowing when your massage is not appropriate, knowing when the majority of time that it is, and also understanding how to incorporate encouragements to your clients on properly moving lymph. One of my favorite ways is a trampoline. Underused and super fun. So I'll actually film a video segment for you guys for one of the weeks. I'm not sure which one it'll be yet. Maybe week two or week three, probably end up being a little bit of week two and three, where I show you some techniques you can do with a very cheap trampoline. And if you don't have a trampoline, just showing you how to do some things on the ground to get things moving and to make sure that you've hit each of the major lymphatic trunk sites, major node sites, and encouragement of moving things back to the heart. We'll also talk about fluid management through hydration and trace minerals. And we'll talk about some of the newer techniques, compression techniques that they use for lymphatics, which I think are marvelous.
Wonderful. So
yeah, that in a nutshell is what we'll be covering in the 3 weeks, but I'd love to field any questions.
Some in the chat box. I mean, Kathy, when I studied at university, my bodywork degree, we did some naturopathy and Vada lymphatic work. And I remember, you know, the one quarter of the body or so draining into one side and three quarters in the other. For those that are watching, because we've got craniosacral therapists, bone therapists, structural integrators, osteopaths, movement therapists, we've wanted to be cross-partisan and cross-pollinate all the different modalities of bodywork and movement. So we have a mix of practitioners watching, for sure. I'm going to watch the recording of this, the replay. And we know, because we invite you to feed these people with exciting stuff that they can apply in their practices. So some people will be going very light touch. Other people will be going more myofascial release, or as Carol Davis likes to call it, myofascial induction, working with the piezoelectric nature and tissue changes. So I understand that this will be useful to all kinds of approaches to how they actually implement those changes, but a better understanding of assessment and anatomy will help them to notice and do something in the myriad of ways that we can help move and support the lymphatics. Could you say something about, you know, who's this for? Who will soak in the information, maybe update or revise what they studied with new stuff and be able to use it in their practice?
Absolutely. It's for all of you for sure, because you're all touch or movement therapists. So what I don't want to do is isolate just the touch people who most likely have taken lymphatic courses and know how to palpate the area. But I do have to cover that because that's a huge part of the assessment process. The assessment process comes from understanding movement strategies as well as being able to palpate. I mean, macular dissection is movement assessment plus palpation plus understanding of anatomy. So the only way I work is through a multiple level of assessments. It's born from a place of not really trusting myself with my knowledge. I don't know if anybody is anything like that, like me. It was like, I don't think I know enough to be called a doctor or a master of anatomy. I remember being in my office of my thesis advisor, like crying basically in his arms saying, "You cannot give me a master's of anatomy. I don't know enough." And he was like, "That's pretty much a sign that you do." if you're having that kind of a freak out. And so I want to make sure that you guys can palpate for the different channel areas and knowing what to look for and feel for, knowing what to hear in a history, because a big part of the examination and assessment process is actually listening to your patient, asking the right questions. So we'll have a little bit of a lymphatic questionnaire and kind of just get you guys thinking about what do I ask? Like, how can I help? Because not every patient's going to walk in with scintigraphy. It's a pretty expensive study. So you may end up with more of what one of my colleagues, she owns this company called the Breast Health Project. And I'll talk about her and I'll share her link with you guys next week. But she, Adia Fish, she's amazing. And she wanted to talk more about, like, why do we have to wait for somebody to get cancer to care about the breast lymph? Like, mm-hmm. why does it have to be that bad? Like, why can't we promote the proper movement in the lymphatic, show someone how to do a proper breast lymphatic massage? And I think that can be applied to the entire body. So we'll talk about some movement strategies. And then in ID, we use these things called pendulums, and that's how we move through space. So I'll give you guys some examples of some pendulums that you can do for the femoral triangle, some pendulums you can do for cisterna chyli, some pendulums that you can do for subclavian jugular trunks. And these require just some fun movements that involve not a passive experience, but an active experience. Why active? Because we need to use muscle contraction and breathing, which are two of my favorite things to talk about on the planet. And so what are some of our pendulums and ID become are lymphatic movers. And we've had amazing reports back to us saying, oh my God, I had this weird lymph node in my superficial inguinal region. I don't have an STD and I don't know why it's there. And I'm like, oh, well, you know, pectineus is a drainage site for around the lymphatics. If your femur can't centrate well, if you're really tight at the hip there, then it might stagnate the lymphatics going in and you may not have lymphadenopathy anywhere but there. And then their heads are like, what? And so I don't have cancer. I'm like, well, if you want to go get checked out by your oncologist, or if you want to get checked out by your GP and get a referral to an oncologist, you can certainly do that. You're going to have to get a biopsy, you know, and scintigraphy to even know. So before you go there, maybe let's just get everything moving and see if you can decrease the stagnation. Let's work on your hydration. Let's work on your trace minerals. And let's do some breathing with movement, because those are the ways that we move the lymphatic system. And you know, 99 times out of 100, it's going to be moving that crap, and the people are really happy, and most of them don't have cancer. So rather than catastrophize the situation of like cancer, infection, what you can do instead is say, like, how do I get my lymphatics moving on a regular basis, and how do I self-assess, or what do I look for with my clients where they may be stagnating? Nothing much freaks me out. You know, I do want you to know the red flags, which we'll talk about next week. And we'll talk about when, you know, these kinds of things are appropriate or when they are not. And most of the time they're going to be pretty appropriate. So you can ease your mind a lot with that. But yeah, I'll show you some different things, and I'll show you a video of me doing some stuff. And that'll be in the talk, so that you can go back and watch the recording as many times as you want. And then those principles can be applied to pretty much anywhere in the body. But we'll cover the first week, just basic lymphatics, but then the second and third week of the talks, so the 21st and the 28th of October, we'll do some like body strategies. We'll do like lower extremity strategies, upper body strategies. And lo and behold, we're going to show you how to do some proper breast lymph movement, some proper arm lymph movement. I hope you guys aren't scared of that. I'm not scared of that. I mean, it's ridiculous that we have to be scared of that at all. We should be talking about breasts and how wonderful they are, and how we need to understand the lymphatics of them, because this is a lymphatic system that crosses midline. You know, other than the thoracic duct, we don't really do that.
Do you know the Anthroposophical Medical Company, Walida? I found out about they have a health center, I think it's in the center of Paris, where they use their really natural organic skin exfoliator, circulation increasing stuff to run breast awareness, health, self-massage, lymphatic massage. They have this beautiful like room with mosaics and then these wooden booths for the women to have privacy and to sit and learn how to do that. I think that's probably the only place
I've heard of. That is doing. Yeah, that's beautiful.
Yeah. Amazing, yeah.
Oh my God, and not just breast, folks. We're talking about thighs. We're talking about legs. We're talking about arms. It's not just for people that have a current infection. Remember, this is your immune system. If you want, I can't believe the whole world isn't talking about this right now. I can't believe we're not all saying, what can I do to improve my immune system? The number one thing you can do is stay home does not mean stay on the couch. Stay home does not even mean stay inside, right? get some fresh air and get your body moving. It's one of the best things you can do for your lymphatics is breathe and move. And remember, this gets everything filtering and circulating. It improves your immune system. There's a litany of research to support that exercise doesn't, don't use the words boost immunity because that means you have an autoimmune disease. Use the terms improves immune response, right? Helps make the immune response a normal and healthy one. And so, yeah, we're going to talk not only about assessment palpation, but what you can do. And we'll talk about the wonders of the dry brush and compression socks. We're going to have so much fun in the next 3 weeks. And I want you guys to get interactive and tell me what works for you. And one of my favorite therapists, I don't know if you guys have had him on yet, but you should. His name is Dr. Perry Nicholson. And if not, I'll introduce you to him and Diafish. They were on one of our talks with Immaculate Dissection and talking about lymph. And they both have separate courses for lymphatics. And I think that the more courses you can take and the more ideas you can get on moving lymphatics, the better off you are. So I'll share with you some of our research pearls on what we do to help lymphatics.
Fantastic. Thank you. So we talked about breast health and tissue health generally, immunity.
Fat processing.
Fat processing.
Want to be able to process fat better and don't want it sticking to platelets on your endothelial cells of your arteries, then maybe get moving. The body wants movement in the blood vessels. And if there is a peripheral or a local vascular resistance, that means not as much waste is moved into the extracellular area, not as much things can move to a negative space into the lymphatic system. So it becomes a pretty crucial piece to being able to manage your nutrition through the intestines and through the lacteals and being able to move into the portal vein of the liver. So one of the best ways to take care of your liver is to get the lymphatics moving.
So those are some of many of the good reasons to learn more about the lymphatics and to revisit it.
Oh my God, yeah. So great. I really hope that a global pandemic alone would make what people want to talk about it. But what I mean, you guys are so amazing. You and ID and Perry Nicholson and Dia, these are the only four things I've come across in the last 6 months of this pandemic that are talking about the lymphatics. And maybe I'm just watching the wrong things. And it may be true that many more people are talking about it. But when I read my newsfeed in the morning, like I don't even love to read it because it's just a lot of negativity. But like I look at it and I'm like, where is the talk about lymphatics? Like, are we going to talk about the fact that we should all be exercising right now and that we should be taking care of ourselves? Like, the discussions are a lot less of the percentage. So I'm so excited that you folks want to talk about it because it's going to help so much with your immune system, with your fluid management system, with hormone repackaging, which we'll talk about, hormone resorption, and how it can help menopause and andropause and just, you know, things that you think are not related, like endometriosis. In Chinese medicine, endometriosis is linked to the lymphatic system. So we'll talk more about, you know, the things that you don't think are associated with lymphatics that actually are.
Mm. So, I've seen some people over these months flagging that we should be having the conversation about how to support our immunity, not boost. But yeah, they were saying boost our immunity or even just foster practices, but nobody was actually saying how. So that's why we, and our members, our super cool members said, get Kathy to talk about that next. So we
that's
had a few
most conversation. So I'm glad that you guys want to talk about that because we're going to be doing some things that seem really goofy and weird. Like watching Julie jump on a trampoline. That's going to be really entertaining, I think, for a lot of people. My husband and I have two trampolines. We have one in the house and one outside the house. And there's not a day goes by that I'm not on it. And we find it to be really, really crucial to the management of lymphatics. So I can't wait to show you guys some things that you can do for various areas and why it works, why that piezoelectric effect, if you're on the ground or even on the trampoline, you still get some piezoelectric, but you're mostly just creating this contraction while you're breathing that pumps and moves the lymphatics, you know, through their channels, ducts and systems. So
fantastic.
Yeah. Do we have questions at all in the last few minutes?
Some thanks and my son wants a trampoline, so this is a good reason to get one. I'll say, Dylan, yeah, you can have one because of lymphatics. He'll say, what's lymphatics?
what is that, Dad? And you're like, let me make you watch the Dooley. So it's actually really fun. I feel like kids, you know how they get colds and then they recover really fast because their immune systems are kind of getting new and they get sick a lot, which is actually a good thing. I know that sounds terrible, but they're developing their immune system. So they have to get sick a little bit. Getting sick does not mean you have a poor immune system. People just brag about, you know, how like, oh, I never get sick. I'm just like, whoa, where are your antibodies then? And how are your B cells and T cells tagging things? So it's about being able to not stay sick and being able to recover and become resilient. And I'm not saying I never get sick. I mean, I fly very often. I do have really good cleanliness practices. And I know we're all wearing masks, which is great. It's just, there are things that you can do that if you do get ill, like you recover really fast. Like I get sick, but I recover like really fast. That's really important to me. So I'm like, I think that misperception about the lymphatics is really weird. But kids, they get really, really sick, these big sicknesses, and they get usually better really quickly, right? Yeah. Why is that? Part of the reason is that they're jumping around all the time. They're just like moving constantly and their lymphatics don't have much time to stagnate. But when you get sick and you have to rest and you recuperate and then you rebuild your system again, because you want to save the energy when you're sick to be able to have all the energy for the immune cells to be able to kill a pathogen, right? To repackage and move. But for the most part, when you're well is when you should be optimizing your immune system. Don't wait to get sick. But if you are sick, there are things that you can do too. So we'll cover that as well.
Super cool. Well, it was very clear and comprehensive. So I'm not seeing any questions in Zoom.
Oh, but no. Okay.
And nothing on Facebook as I can, you know, as far as okay. I can see.
Hopefully there's silence is complacency, which means that it's just, oh, I'm so excited about next week's talk. But I just wanted to give you guys a quick overview of what we talk about with the three talks. So next Wednesday is the first part of the paid course. And we'll talk about more of the biomechanisms of the lymphatics. I think it's really important to understand the flows and how things happen. We'll talk about hydration. We'll talk about sodium, potassium, and their role with lymphatics, because it's under discussed and very, very important. And so we'll talk about how the foods you eat and the fluids that you drink, how they help you manage the lymphatics, as well as how these lymphatics even move through space. And then the following Wednesday on the 21st, we're going to talk about the lower extremity. We'll talk about just from feet up, moving up to cisterna chiali through thoracic duct and over to the left shoulder. So we'll do that, as well as some mechanisms of how to get those moving with some things that in ID we call pendulums and dry brushing and other techniques that we'll talk about. And we'll cover palpation of major lymph channels. And then the third one on the 28th is the upper body. So we'll talk more about the arm of the left side, but particularly the right side, the breast tissue, the head, neck. So we'll just cover a little bit more in depth about that. And of course, give you more and more assessment strategies and really fun corrections. And it should be fun. It shouldn't be a chore. You know, when I get my lymphatics moving, I'm really having to, it's really hard not to have fun on a trampoline.
Yeah.
It's like, it's really fun. But, you know, some people may be like, I'm worried about my ankles or I'm worried about my neck or whatever. So I'll show you how to properly use, you know, different assessments on the ground, corrections on the ground, on a trampoline, some different ways to ease into moving lymphatics in that way. Because we all know that any movement moves lymphatics, but not everyone should be running right now because they may be working through an injury or they may have, you know, particular issues. So we want to make sure to handle those things that come up with your patients so that nobody has an excuse not to move lymphatics actively. Now, passively is wonderful. We all know lymphatic massage works and it's fantastic. But, you know, your patient can't do that 24/7, 365, right? So what can they do in their own time? What can you promote for them to do to get the lymphatic system moving on their own? And a lot of that is active movements. So
awesome.
I think we have a hand raise.
Oh, we have a hand raise from
Anik. Yes.
Yeah. Do you want to ask a question, Anik, or ask a do you want me to enable your audio?
No. We can unmute her, right?
Let's see. My friend Kathy, when I was a teenager, he had a massive trampoline, and he was a wakeboarder and a windsurfer, all kinds of a very active guy. And he had one of those, a rope with the triangle with the hand thing, and he used to do like flips sideways and rolling. His lymph, if he's still doing that, he'd be about my age now, like 38 years old or so. If he's still doing that, I guess he's probably got one of the healthiest lymph from all these centrifugal and centripedal, I don't know. Amazing advanced trampolining. And just to say with the course, yeah, we're trying to make it super accessible at £60. And if you're a member of Embodied Health Learning, you get a further 20% off, which makes it £48. And other you can group together Kathy's courses. You know, if you're not a member and you want to take this lymph one, you're welcome to join and get 20% off all the other ones. No, that was a mistake, the hand raise.
Okay. I didn't want to, because I saw, I was like, oh, does she have a question? I want to answer.
It's a digital lymph movement exercise.
That's right. I love it. Yeah, we're going to have a lot of fun. Hopefully you folks are super interested. I'm sure if you haven't met me yet, 3 hours is for 48 or 60 pounds. It's a lot of information. You'll be going to be given lots of links and some things to help you with your learning process. And you, of course, you'll have the recording. So I think it'll be really worth the investment. If it's not worth the investment, you let me know and I'll you know, be at your beck and call, answering your questions, whatever you feel is worthy of your investment. Because I think that I really respect embodied health learning for making it cost efficient for people during this difficult time. And I think that that is so amazing. It's really inspired me in a lot of ways to do more things for free on my Instagram. Just to, you know, this is a tough time and we need to help each other. And we don't want to break your bank. We just want you to come and learn. And we want to see that you have value in it. We don't want to break your bank. So, and if you come, you might be able to get $100 poster for free. And if I'm really inspired, if you guys are really interactive, there's going to be more than one poster given away.
I've noticed some questions from our own team. Okay. So we don't want to neglect Andrea. Can you ask something briefly about lymph and kidney connection, if there is one? I'm imagining, well, I know there is, but the ankle is huge as an indicator of that link and that difficulty, isn't it?
It is, yeah. The pitting edema that we'll talk about. We'll talk about that more depth on the 21st. Not to bait you too much, Andrea. I know you'll be there anyway. But the pitting edema and even non-pitting edema that we see with lower leg accumulation, the kidney can get a little overwhelmed with any, you know, with an inconsistent amount of fluid to manage. And it's not so weird that the acupuncture kidney points for, you know, this management pathway are right there around the ankle and shin area, especially kidney 7. So we'll talk about, you know, the kidneys and the filtration, and that'll be a big part of the basic assessment that we talk about next week. But as far as the what to do about it, we'll be a little bit more on the 21st.
I've noticed as well in some women clients that on consuming dairy products, they get a lymphedema kind of symptom pattern for quite some days in the upper thighs area reported.
I'll tell you about that too. And it's amazing that you noticed that. That is, it has to do with the estrogen component of lymphatics, the hormone absorption, and then also to do with dairy igniting the immune system through the inflammatory cascade, inflammatory cytokines.
So some more celebratory thanks. There was another question. Is it necessary to watch it live or is it going to be available? Yeah, these are recorded. You can watch, you can join the course and you'll have access to the recordings and audio downloads ongoing. So you don't have to catch the lives. And if you watch them, so if, for example, if you sign up to the course and you can't make the lives, but you've got questions, you can get the questions to us by email. Or and we'll try and answer them in the lives after, you know, in the subsequent live. They'll be available for people who sign up to the course ongoing. And for members, as I said, you get a discount to the courses. They're an add-on to the membership. So we have hundreds of webinars, which are fantastic, including all these ones of Kathy and other assessment ones. And so, but the courses, yeah, if you sign up for the course, you can watch the recording. Is Qigong good for lymphatic movement?
That's too. Qigong is wonderful. I was trained in Qigong early on in my Chinese medicine studies. It's wonderful. It's not something that I resonate with as much because I really like the IV pendulum flow patterns. It's one of the many things you can do to move lymph, and it's fantastic. Qigong, Tai Chi, martial arts, yoga, all those things move lymph. So absolutely. I like Qigong a lot because they'll do certain tapping techniques on certain areas of major lymphatic trunks. So we'll talk a little bit about that. Like they'll do padding.
Yeah.
Like near the
doing, don't they?
Yeah. And they'll hit points like they basically hit the subclavian trunks, jugular trunks. They hit into the bronchomediastinal trunks. I call it the Tarzan. Right. They do this like padding, you know, to kind of knock things loose and go. So absolutely. And their concentrated movements through space, of course, are going to move lymphatics. Yeah, I mean, you're going to be hard pressed to find any movement that doesn't move the lymph, because muscle contraction moves lymph as well as respiration. But we'll do a little bit more, just concentrate on the anatomy movement. And Qigong is one of those things. It's wonderful.
Yeah, I studied Qigong as well quite a lot in my teens and 20s. It's wonderful. And I realized that it's because a big part of what we called it, we embodied health learning, embodiment practices now in modern times. You know, Qigong's at least 5,000 years old and is an embodiment practice of somatic interoception, noticing. So feeling more of what's in our inner world. It's super cool for that. And I only build the bridge between modern day embodiment practices about 5 years ago in my understanding. And it's all there in the Qigong. You're supposed to feel the inner ocean and the outer ocean when you're breathing, for example.
I love that. That's great. One of my breast cancer patients said something very similar. She's amazing. She just finished radiation and chemotherapy, and she's in her stage 3. And she's remarkable. She had lumpectomy, the whole deal. And one of the things that she reported to me during the treatments, she kind of stopped doing everything. And she didn't have mastectomy. They were able to save the breast, which is woohoo. But she was talking about how disconnected she felt with her lower extremity. Mm. And I was explaining to her like the scarring and the radiation and how we get like the inability to flow back up into the neck. And she had a lot of work done on her left breast. And so I described to her how that affects her legs. And she was like, that is bizarre. That is amazing. And then I remember giving her some of the pendulums that we'll do. And it was for her lower body. And she reported back to me. She was like, I can't believe how much better that feels already. That is bizarre. And I'm like, it's also bizarre. Look at the anatomy. Look at this chain. And then she's like, I know, but it's just so neat. And it's just amazing to see someone who had endured so much during a global pandemic, nonetheless, but had been enduring so much over the course of several months, feel an immediate relief from lymphatic work, which is like, you guys have such a huge role to play in the treatment of lymphatic stagnation.
Mm. Cool. Some people are asking about price for members. Mariette, yeah, please email us. I think, or Andrea, if you're back in, could you type in the chat what the price is for members of eHealth Learning who want to take Kathy's course? The standard price, which is at least half price. You know, when we started this series with, I don't know who was the first one, but when March hit and we started doing many webinars and support groups for different modalities and some multi-modality groups to see how people were practicing. Yeah. Okay. So for members, it's 48. So you get that 20% off a member. So that's like super. Yeah. And the regular price of 60, we calculated was at least half price. You know, when we talked to the teachers about the hours and what they're going to include in there, it was at least, everybody would have normally priced at least 120 UK pounds. So join, and you can join annually and get the course for free. And we pay Kathy the same. And so she won't be losing out. And you get...
I just want to help. I don't care, guys.
Yeah, join. If you're not a member and you want to take part in Kathy's course, you can join for just £99. Thanks, Andrea. And get Kathy's course included in that, and 20% off all her other courses and all our other courses and the upcoming courses. We have Dean Juhan, we have Till Lao Chu on myofascial release. Andrea literally can't keep up with publishing the courses and the webinars because we have so many. We have great, great people. Nick Totten will be coming back soon to give his embodied relating in the therapeutic field course, which is going to be great on interpersonal embodied relating, and so much good stuff. So yeah, £99, you can get Kathy's course and 20% off all the other courses and all our back catalog, which is hundreds of amazing webinars with great speakers like tonight. Yeah, cool. So yeah, I think if there's no more questions there.
Thank you so much for having me. It was so wonderful to answer some of your questions, and we hope that we spiked your interest for the following 3 weeks. And if you decide to invest, I will not make it an investment wasted. You will have a great time. You'll learn a ton. You'll get to watch it, the recording, as many times as you want, I believe. So you can go back and really enjoy it. And we'll have some helpful research links that I'll send Andrea to send to you so that you guys can read some backstories and anything, articles that I suggest. I'll have that all ready for you.
Super cool. So next week is 3 p.m. UK time. That's an anomaly in the way that we normally offer the courses due to Kathy's busy treatment travel schedule and changes. So if you can't be available at 3 p.m., of course, you can watch the recording, which we make available usually within 24 hours of things happening. I literally edit them the same day and then we put them up the next day in most of the time. So you can watch that in good time for the second session, which we run them at 7 p.m. to be easy on our American audience and teachers. And most people in the UK have finished their practice by 7 p.m. UK time. So you'll be able to catch up. Thanks, Andrea. You'll be able to catch up between the first and second week and join us at 7 p.m. for the second session, which is the 21st, yeah? And then the 28th.
Yes. Those are the normal times. Sorry about next week, folks. It was just, there's not so many flights going these days, so I have to grab one when I can. And I apologize for the inconsistency in the timing, but you know, it'll be such dense information, you probably want to watch it a couple times anyway.
Yeah, people enjoy watching yours back. So yeah, thanks you for your time, Kathy, and your knowledge and enthusiasm. And I'm excited to learn more. Things were ticking in my mind and links clicking about clients and things in myself. I've experienced Kathy's pendulums firsthand. She did a session with myself and my partner on walking and gait, and we've experienced the pendulums. I've been doing them. And I'm thinking from tonight that I need to start doing that specific pendulum again because I'm having a niggle. Yeah, that's been useful for me. Yeah,
I've got homework. All recorded, right?
Awesome. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. Thank you, Kathy. Thanks, Andrea. And see you all next week. We hope it's not to be missed.
Thank you, folks. Bye.
Good night, everyone.